Can we assume that a professor with 50, 75, possibly 125 sets of sloppily typed or written blue books or discs to grade is going to read through everything carefully? I don't think so. Of necessity, most professors will engage in what's called the checklist method of exam grading, meaning they've gone through the trouble of developing a hypo in the expectation it will prompt identification and discussion of certain issues. The professor lists those issues on a sheet of paper. Perhaps there are 10, perhaps 25. I've heard of exams where the professor announced, "There are as many as 200 possible issues to be identified in this exam." In other words, say 6 to 8 hypos, each with as many as 25 issues. That's what's called a racehorse exam. Not much analysis wanted. The name of the game is to touch briefly upon as many issues as possible. But let's talk about the more normal situation. Let's say the professor is looking for identification and discussion of 10 issues in a given hypo. The professor's initial reading of exam responses will be cursory, so cursory that I've heard of instances in which professors had their clever teenage children do the first read-through. They instructed the kids, "Wherever you see anything remotely touching upon this law, put a 1, this a 2, this a 4, and so on up to 10. The reader goes through very quickly, noting where any items on the checklist are touched upon, if only tangentially. If the professor finds that only 6 of 10 items on the checklist have been, in any respect, touched upon, she may immediately put that response in a rather large pile, which used to be marked C and below, B minus and below under recent, more generous grading curves. Because the threshold requirement for getting a solid B is to identify 7 or more out of 10. If you're looking for an A, you'd better identify 9 or 10 of 10. I assure you that will be a very small pile. Now the professor goes back to the piles to evaluate the quality of the analysis of items, issues, corresponding to what's on the checklist. By and large, if something doesn't correspond to anything on the checklist, the professor doesn't pay any attention to it. One of the things that disturbs law students when they have an opportunity to see their exam responses, I say when they have an opportunity, because in most law schools and with most professors, exam responses are not handed back. You have to make a special arrangement, often an appointment with the professor, to see your exam response. It is the policy of some individual professors that if you receive a B grade or higher, you have no absolute right to see your response. This is because it's hard work developing hypos. Professors don't want to have to develop new hypos every year. They like to modify or recycle existing hypos or parts of hypos, which is why it can be such an advantage to get hold of old exams of a particular professor. Many of the same fact patterns and issues tend to reappear. However, it's my impression that it is increasingly difficult to find copies of particular professors' old exams. As I was saying, one thing that disturbs law students when they see their exam response is that typically, page after page, there are few, if any, comments by the professor. One student said, "I went through my entire exam. The only comment anywhere was a penciled, huh." Presumably, either the professor found nothing of relevance or nothing worth remarking on. Not properly attuned to what the professor is looking for, students frequently spin their wheels and waste time in irrelevant discussion. You barely have time to address what's called for by the professor's question or instruction. You don't have time to ramble in irrelevant discussion. So skip over the facts. Begin by getting a firm grip on the question instruction. Okay, you're just a few minutes into the exam. You've reviewed the instructions, completed the first phase of the preliminary overview, returned to the first hypo, in the instance of our imagined 4-hour exam, the torts hypo on page 90. You've completed the preliminary overview for this hypo by skipping the facts to the open-ended question at the bottom, discuss the rights and liabilities of all the parties. Now you're going to get involved with the facts for the very first time. But I hope I've impressed upon you the danger in simply plunging into a fact pattern. Facts are often complicated, confusing, so when you go into a fact pattern, you want to have a very definite purpose. For example, what if I told you to find the word elephant on page 90? Don't look for it, it's not there. But if it were, how quickly could you find the word elephant? Possibly you think of yourself as something of a slow reader. Even so, I bet you could move down the page in a matter of seconds, your fingers swishing from side to side, like you've seen in the speed reading ads. Until elephant. You'd find it very quickly. Why? Think for a moment about why you would find the word elephant so quickly. Stop. continue. The answer is because you have focus. You know exactly what you're looking for, and that's the key. Every time you go into a fact pattern, you want a definite purpose, to know exactly what you're looking for. You want, in effect, to define and look for elephant. This enables you to read selectively, to scan the facts, ignoring everything not related to elephant. Elephant, as you engage the facts of a hypo for the first time, is defined by what I call step one, which is found on page 28 of the primer. At this juncture in the live program, at about the 75-minute mark, we take the first break. Doubtless, you've gone longer. You were introduced to use of the audio program. You had longer to stop and reflect on the diagrams. If you haven't done so, this might be a good time to take a break. Stop,